Hi, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be here. And who knows, maybe I'll actually talk a little bit about step six tonight. We'll see about that deal, how that works out. I like this group. I really do. I mean, there's a lot I like about this group because, number one, I see people that I haven't seen in a long time that I've known for a long time, people like Lou and Bill and Marcia. We go back. Elizabeth, Elaine. It's great to see Elaine. And I know there's a lot of people that I see Mike back there. And, I mean, I just go through John and just a lot of people in the north end that I don't see a lot. And I see Billy there. And my second sponsor, my first sponsor was a guy named Bob Sullivan, who's just a wonderful guy. And I'll be talking about guys like Bob Sullivan and Joe Snyder and Bud Dunbar. And, you know, these are people I, really was tutored by and mentored by for many, many years and had a great, great influence on me. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want anybody to think that I've ever had an original thought, you know. Well, I had some original thoughts, but thank God, my sponsors and God beat them out of me, you know. My original thoughts got me in trouble, but who was it? Somebody, I think it was Susan or somebody was talking to me about Russellisms, and I said, Russellism, I stole anything you ever hear decent from me that's good, I stole, you know, and I was told that's okay in AA. You're allowed to steal. That's how we pass it on. It's just, O'Keefe used to tell me, he says, just give me credit. He says, you have to give me credit the first time. And then you say, you know, well, as Ray O'Keefe used to say. And then you say, well, as another sober alcoholic used to say, or as I've heard it say. And then by the time you get to the third or fourth time, it's, you know, like, well, as I always say, you know. And 10 years down the road, it's yours. I mean, nobody can wrestle it from you, you know. That's the way it's always been in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's sort of like, and even Bill and Dr. Bob, you know, said we didn't invent AA. It's been around for thousands of years. It really has been. I'm gonna prove it to you. I'm gonna read something, sort of a favorite. I'll warn you. I'm gonna read you some scripture tonight. So they say you can't do that in AA, but that's pretty much horseshit. But like a lot of other, you do whatever you want to do in AA. You know, as long as it's part of your story. I mean, it's part of my deal. Probably good not to walk in with 3 days and start quoting from the Bible, though. Your feelings might get hurt. Somebody will say something to you. I don't know. But it says God will, you know, that's, hey, for the first 4 years, that's all they read from the Bible. And it does say, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. You all want to follow their path, don't you? This has been around for a long time. AA and the concepts of AA and the concepts we're talking about, like the six steps, have been around for years. And we really, you know, it's sort of cliche us, we really stand on the shoulders of giants, of people that have gone before us that have had some really great spiritual wisdom. And, so I don't want to miss out on stuff just because of contempt prior to investigation. I don't want to miss out on anything just because I'm prejudiced towards religious people. When we have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says we gotta abandon this stuff. We gotta see where religious people and other people can be right. He says we know only a little. I know only a little. It says God will disclose to you more each day for the man who still. He'll tell you what to say and how to say it and everything like that. And it's really God who does all this stuff, all this moving and shaking. I don't do much of anything. So. And that's really, I believe that to be true. One of the things I lost in Alcoholics Anonymous, which was a good thing for me to lose, is my feeling, for the most part, and I really do think it's for the most part, is my incredible feeling of entitlement. It's been a long time since I felt entitled. I probably have a little of it left in me that I don't even know about. I'm probably in denial. You know, I need my sponsor to say, oh, yeah, Russ, what about this? And what, you know, so. But the truth is, I had such a strong feeling of I was entitled to certain things. I was entitled to a certain amount of money, a certain car, a certain social life, a certain status, I'm entitled to so much. And it's kind of rough when you feel like you're entitled to stuff because if you feel you're entitled to stuff, you're going to live a life of heavy disappointment. I can tell you this, and a lot of anxiety and resentment. But it's been many, many years since I felt entitled. I don't feel entitled to anything. I don't feel entitled to it. Like I get anything, I'm the most surprised guy in the world. And the great thing about not feeling entitled is when you don't feel entitled to anything, then everything's a gift. Then everything's a gift. You know, this meeting's a gift. You guys are a gift. Any friend I have is a gift. You know, everything about my life is a gift. My sobriety is a gift. So when you feel like everything you got going for you is a gift, you know, you walk around like wacko grateful. You walk around pretty, this is a pretty cool deal. Because, man, I don't deserve nothing. You know, I talk a lot about the grace of God and God's grace, and I think the founders talked a lot about the grace of God. And one guy came up to me after meeting because he was interested. He was not being, he wasn't a mocker. He wasn't being critical or anything. He said, "What do you mean by God's grace?" And I asked him one question. I said, "What have you ever done to deserve being here?" I said, "What have you ever done to deserve what you got right now, to deserve one day of sobriety?" And, you know, if you're going to be honest with yourself, if you're going to be honest, you had to say, "I've done nothing." I said, "Well, that's the grace of God. You've done nothing. You know, there are guys dying on the street. There are guys that can't stop drinking. There are guys that are dying in car accidents. You're here. You're sober. You know, for what have you done to deserve this?" And the answer is nada, nothing, zero. So it's just the grace of God that I'm here and being able to talk to you. And it's a real privilege to be here and talking about, really, quite frankly, an area of the steps that I really, really like talking about. You know, sometimes I think, not a lot about this, but sometimes I think that maybe I do a little shortchanging on the steps a little bit, a shortchanging of AA, but I don't really think it's true. I think we all have different instruments we play. We all have different, it's like a giant, well, what do they say? AA is like a giant toolbox that has a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I have my certain deal. I have a certain thing. You know, there's some people that play the clarinet. Some people play the oboe. You know, I play my deal, you know, and my deal is a little bit different than, let's say, Ray O'Keefe's deal, and a little bit different than Joe Snyder's deal. And I was just thinking the other day, it's sort of amazing to me that anybody stands up and ever picks up a white chip it's amazing to me whenever I see anybody pick up a white chip at a meeting that I'm doing, because I feel that I never talk about alcohol. I never talk about drinking. I mean, I know I do probably. I probably refer to it even in the first step. I don't even think I talk about it much. And it's always amazing to me that I could be going through a meeting just talking about God and how he's working in my life and all that sort of stuff, and some alcoholic stands up and picks up a white chip. I know for some reason he figures out, as crazy as he is, that this has something to do with not drinking. So here's what I'm figuring, that maybe this recovery thing doesn't have much to do with me. There may be some other force working in here. You know, I'm working on that theory. I've been working on that theory for 25 years. So with that in mind, and with that being the theory, I want to talk a little bit about, because that is the deal. That is really the deal. You know, the deal, the great fact, the tremendous fact. I don't care what fact you want to talk about. I want to major on the major. I want to stick to the issue. And it's like that kid said to me. I spoke about it. It's like that kid came up to me. He says, "You know, I heard a lot about you." He says, "The only problem is you talk a lot about God." I said, "Yeah, that's my tune. That's my song. You know, it's and I don't really vary from that." So when I first started this meeting, there's a they've been taping these things, and you can check this out. But I mean, I know there's the first meeting I had in here. It was birthday night, so I think I was only supposed to talk for 15 minutes. So I spoke for 40, of course, and I gave him 2 minutes for the birthdays or something. But the point is since it was birthday night, they said, we were talking about it, I said, "Well, why don't you just do like a little intro on the steps?" So I did a little intro. That's what I called it. I said, "Well, this will be like an introduction to the steps." And if I remember correctly, I think what I said, I hope this was during the intro meeting, but it might be on the first day. I said, "Look," I said what I say a lot, is I said, you know, we all came from these steps maybe from different angles, have different strategies, have different ways we look at this stuff. And some guy may come at it from a drunkalogue, or may look at it from one point of view or another point of view. And I said, "Well, it's not really important." I said, I'm just going to tell you the way I look at these things. I said, I have one frame of reference. And you don't have to go with my frame of reference, but just understand where I'm coming from. And if you understand where I'm coming from, you may not... Maybe it'll help you not to get lost, because I need to be able to understand the frame of reference I come from in this program now, and I got to tell you, I didn't have this when I first came in, for sure. And I didn't have this for years and years and years, for sure. And I was mixed up for years and years and years. I'm not saying I'm all that well now, okay? But I had it for years and years. I was really trying to understand these steps. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. It's tough. I know we're all going to try to understand. I know more than anything else, you're going to try to understand these steps. And, hey, let me tell you something. Good luck to you. Good luck to people who are trying to figure these things out, okay? And, you know, sometimes you ever figure out when you're trying to really work these steps and figure them out, that's when you're the most confused. There's probably a reason for that. But there's certain things that are said in the big book, which I'm going to read. And you know what I'm going to read, because I read the same things at every meeting. Because, and here's why I read the same things at every meeting. Because if you got the truth in your hand, and the truth is in this book, and the truth is in like five or six paragraphs, and it's the thing that's going to save people's lives, why would you not read it at every meeting? I mean, you'd read it at every meeting. So I read the same thing at every meeting. And this is the truth for me. The truth to me is that there's only one thing that's important in Alcoholics Anonymous. One thing. Not 12 things, not 20 things, not 24 things, not any of that. There's only one thing that's important. And if you figure, if you somehow get that one thing, you're going to get everything else. All things will be added. You know, it's in the Bible, it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added to you. There's nothing in the Bible that isn't in the big book. There's no principle that isn't the same. It says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added. If you seek God, you'll do good orderly direction. You'll have a shot. If you seek God, you'll get the carrot ability. If you seek God, you won't drink. If you seek God, you will hang around with the people you're supposed to hang around with. You'll find the fellowship you crave. It's all about that deal. Now, that's my theory. You don't have to buy into that. You can hate me for it. You can say, I don't believe anything he says. That's just my deal. You know. Next step series, they'll have like the guy with the clarinet here. He'll be saying, well, it's not about that at all. It's just about not drinking. And you'll decide which deal you're going to go with. And, you know, just depending upon which deal you're going to go with, you may take like a middle ground, or you may, you know, add some paprika to it or something. I don't know what you're going to do. But the point is, depending upon which way you look at this thing, that's the cake you're going to bake. That's where you're going to come out on the deal. You know what I mean? Now, what I did, and I didn't even realize I was doing it at the time, is I just sort of looked at people. And I would say, just like it says in the book, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain. I looked at people that I admired and that I liked and I wanted to be like. And I just sort of followed along. I just like followed them along. I followed along where they were, you know, whatever trail they were going on, that's the trail. If they were reading that, you know, Joe Snyder, you know, sat down one day at Lum's with me and Mike, I'm not supposed to say his last name anyway. It doesn't matter. Mike and me and Mike, he sponsors both of us. And we were sitting down at Lum's. I don't know whether anybody remembers this. I know some of you guys knew Joe. And I never quite understood this deal, but he had a shirt with two pockets. One pocket he had Pall Malls, the other pocket he had like Lucky Strikes. You know what I mean? And unfiltered. And so, you know, a week down the road, I got my shirt. I got my Pall Mall and Lucky Strike. I mean, I was just going to do, I figured maybe that's the secret. I smoked Pall Mall and Lucky Strike, and that'll, you know, I figured that will do. I was going to do whatever these guys are doing, you know, but, you know, he gave me the book Sermon on the Mount. You know, he didn't hand me the Bible. You know what he handed me? He handed me Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. Well, Emmett Fox, Sermon on the Mount is from Matthew 4:5-6 in the Bible. You know what I mean? But he handed me different, he told me to read the 24-hour book. Yeah, Bob Sullivan told me to read the 24-hour book. You know, before we got, you know, our own AA thing or whatever it is, you know, everybody used the 24-hour book. I still use the 24-hour book. This is my book of choice, the 24-hour book. 24-hour book is the big book and the Bible. You know what I mean? So the guys I followed that I wanted to be like, they were into this stuff. You know what I mean? So I don't apologize for it. I'm into this stuff. This is the stuff I'm into. So I believe there's only one thing that's important, and that's and that's what the big book talks about, and that's the main deal, and that is your relationship with God. And if I understand, and I may not understand it totally or completely or anything, but if I understand that that is the number one thing, that relationship and cultivating that relationship and improving that relationship and understanding that relationship, if I understand that's the one thing, then maybe I don't really have to understand everything else. Maybe I don't have to understand everything else, because it says in the 11th step, we're going to start getting involved in inspirational thinking. A different type of thinking. You see, the thinking I had before was, I didn't have like inspirational thinking. I had a different type of thinking, like look at that gal, you know, whatever that thing, whatever the thinking is when you look at some gal and say, look at her, you know, that's the thinking I had. I had urges and emotions and compulsions. And the big book says inspirational thinking. He says, you know what it says? It says sometimes it looks crazy and sometimes it looks weird, and we get into this inspiration. He says, but we come, this is what it says, is we come to rely upon it. It's a whole different type of thinking. And it happens, it's one of the byproducts that happens regarding a person that has a relationship with God. It's one of the things that, it sort of opens up a channel. It's like I was blind and now I can see. It's like we can all see here, we can all hear here, but it's like having a seventh sense, or a sixth sense, or an eighth, whatever it is, it's like another sense. It's like you see something, you read something in the big book that other people don't see. You read something in 12 and 12, and it says something to you, and other people say, well, it doesn't say to me. You hear somebody speaking from the podium, and five guys hear one thing, and you hear something else. You hear, it's like you just, to you, it's like so clear. And somebody's going to say, I didn't hear that. I didn't see that. You know, it's just you're getting something, and people are sitting there trying to understand it. And you say, it's like that picture I talk about at the carnival. You know what I mean? You go to the picture of the carnival, and they stand looking at this picture of a couple of horses or something, and don't you see the elephant? And they say, no, I don't see it. Yeah, there's the elephant. And they say, I don't see the elephant. Some guy's saying, yeah, I see it, the elephant. And you can see it clear as day, and you don't see the elephant. You're looking, you come back, you look, you don't see the elephant. And then one day, all of a sudden, you're looking at it, and you sort of see the elephant. You see a little bit of the elephant, and then all of a sudden, you see the elephant. It's as clear as day. It's like an optical illusion. And then every time you look at it, you can't help but see the elephant. All you see is the elephant. You know, and in here, you can come in here, and you can go to all sorts of step meetings. You can do all sorts of things and not see the elephant. Not see the elephant. And, you know, so there's like a little bit of an added ingredient here. It has to do with a spiritual thing. You know, these are things of the spirit. They're spiritually discerned. You know, some people hear the stuff I'm saying, or the stuff that Joe Snyder's saying, or the stuff that Bob Sullivan's saying, and they say, wow, wow. And a guy sitting next to him says, well, that was pretty much a bunch of horseshit. And they both score the same thing on the IQ test. Because this ain't about IQ, is it? No, it's not really about IQ. So it's really about seeking him. Now I wanna read a couple of things that I've read before. See, I believe that a lot of the answers to this stuff really has to do with the way you think, and it has to do with this book, you know, the Word, this book. And you know, the interesting thing is when you read this thing over and over again and you hear things over and over again, it sort of sticks to your brain over and over again. And I think it works on your brain even when you're thinking, and then one day something pops out. So I think I'm doing me a favor and you a favor by reading some of this stuff. So I wanna read some things that, and then I'm gonna skip around and we're gonna talk a little bit more about the sixth step. It says, this is on page 28, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, I may see this, nobody else may see this, you know what I mean? But I think that's a pretty strong statement. They're basically saying, hey, listen, no matter what you read in this book, no matter what anybody tells you, if everything we're talking about means anything, this is the point. Here's the point. We're about to tell you if it means anything, you got to get this, okay? Means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. I don't care what you say. I know what that means. It means there is a God. He's alive. He's not dead. He's there. He wants to have a relationship with you. You can have a relationship with him if you want it. And you try. That's what it means. You don't have to like that. You know, you can laugh at that. You can do anything you want with that. Except let me just tell you one thing. That happens to be in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So here's the deal. If you're scoffing at that or you're laughing at that and you're 5 or 10 years down the road and AA isn't working for you and you think that's a bunch of bullshit, just please don't tell somebody that AA is not working for you. Just be at least honest about it, saying, you know, maybe it would work for me, but I decided not to work it. because I decided not to buy into that stuff. I decided not to, because it said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed all our path. So just be honest with yourself and say, look, it's not working for me. You know, I'm not enjoying my sobriety. I don't like hanging out here. But then again, I never did this thing in the first place. Don't say, well, I've been working this thing real hard and I've been doing this thing real hard and scoff at that stuff when that stuff is the main linchpin of the whole thing. Don't take the main point of the whole thing, a relationship with God, and flush it down the toilet. And then if you ain't feeling good or things aren't going right for you or you don't seem to be getting out of this, what other people getting? Say, well, I've tried this A thing and it hasn't worked. You haven't done it. You made a conscientious decision that you ain't going to do it. You know, through contemporary investigation, you know what Black Dr. Bob say, if you don't buy into this stuff, if you think this is a joke or through intellectual pride, you don't want to do it, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. So to me, you see, it's pretty clear. You know, I mean, you know, I harp on this stuff because it's the clearest thing in the book. It's the clearest thing in the book. And you want to know something? Here's the deal. This is why it's so important. Because if you don't get it, you're not going to get anything. Here's the bottom line. You don't get this, you're just, you know something? You're just spinning your wheels. You know, you're just taking up space. And I want to talk about taking up space because that's what step six is about. It's about what are you going to be? I mean, that's really, it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys, which I think means that there are boys in here and there are men in here. There are women in here and there are girls in here. Apparently, I think there's, I think the book pretty much says you can pretty much separate. Well, I think there's, I think these steps and the God thing sort of separates people out pretty much all along the way. All along the way, people get separated out here, there, back, forth. You know, you pretty much notice it. After we've been around here for many years, you sort of look around, you look at the landscape, and, you know, after the first 10 years, you know, 99% of A has been cleared out anyway. You know what I mean? There's only a few left. And you sort of look around, and you sort of notice something. You say, you know, I got 10 years, and, you know, he's got 10 years, but he's 10 years. I got to tell you something. Not that we're supposed to compare, but you start noticing, you start seeing people talking, you say, man, I don't know what that guy's got, but there's something going on in that guy's life that ain't going on in my life. You know? I mean, you start noticing there are some guys that are into a different dimension of this deal, are involved in something. You start noticing that. And that it's working differently for different people. When we sincerely took, well, I'm gonna go back to that one because that more on the sixth step. Let me keep on going on this. And then, of course, the things burn the idea in the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is he trust God and clean house. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. It just isn't so. In some cases, wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Your recovery is dependent upon your relationship with God. Here, burn the idea into every person's mind that your recovery, I mean, I got to assume, maybe I'm wrong, that you're in here because you want to recover and you want to know about your recovery. And it says here, burn the idea into every man's mind that the only thing that counts, that your whole recovery is dependent upon your relationship with God. Now, let me ask something. If that's the truth, and if that's what they wrote, how could you possibly have an AA meeting where they're not talking about that shit? I mean, you're going to have to explain that to me. How can you have an AA meeting with that? It's like you're talking around the point. I mean, every AA meeting in the world should be talking about that stuff. I mean, every AA meeting that's going on should mention that at least once, twice, or 15 times. That's the only thing that's important in here. Now, I can understand that if you don't want to talk about AA, if you don't really want to do AA, I can understand why this stuff would piss you off. And you get upset with this stuff. You understand what I'm saying? But why should that bother me? Why should I change the big book or change the message in this book that has great weight and depth just because it bothers somebody out there? Because our big book says if you're distressed about anything, maybe there's something wrong with you. Isn't that what the 10-step spiritual axiom is? That doesn't mean there's something wrong with me just because you're bothered by it. See, now I used to think that. See, that has to do with being codependent and alcoholic. I used to think that. I lived a whole life, that deal. If you wanted to live that life, you're upset, there must be something wrong with me. But that's kind of crummy because most people are upset. They're not at peace with themselves, live lives of quiet desperation. You know, but I want to break free of that stuff. I want to see happy, joyous, and free. Isn't that what this thing is all about? Theme of the 12-step? Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it. Your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the record of your past. Give freely what you have and join us, which shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge roads to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And I wanted to get through that. And there's obviously a lot more I could read. Like, you know, I mean, there's all the books all chock full of the God stuff, right? Of course, we're going to talk about God. You know, God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. But I wanted to get to that so I could start talking about the sixth step, and we're all on the same theme. Now we go to page 63, where they're actually talking about presumably the third step. And it says, well, before I do that, I want to read something from the 12 and 12. And I'm going to read something from the first step, seemingly the first step in the 12 and 12. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA. How many people in here are members of Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm a member. Raise your hand if you're a member. Okay, now listen to this. You may want to know about this deal if you're a member of AA. How would you like to hang around here and have nothing come of it? Wouldn't that be cool? You know, how would you like to like pay your dollar for like 15, 20 years and find that in 15, 20 years it's like been a waste of, it's been like a waste because nothing's come of it. Okay, here you go. How many people are in here? You're either in here for the Rocket in the Fourth Dimension program or you're in here for the Little Good program. I mean, you're really, hey, listen, it's a decision. It's Greensboro. It's a Greensboro decision, you know. This is the deal, you know. You're either living in Miami or Greensboro. You're either here, you're either in, you know, thumb-sucking crybabies, little good program, or you're here in the Rocketed in the Fourth Dimension program, Fellowship of the Spirit deal. Which one you want to join is up to you, really. We know that, you know, I have a theory. My theory is if you're in the little good, thumb-sucking crybabies fellowship, that probably there's a connection between that and drinking again. You understand? Does that make any sense to anybody? I think drinking again has something to do with that deal. I know it does because in the, you know, the 12th step, it says he's going to drink again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Apparently being happy with your sobriety has something to do with drinking again. So I think if you're a thumb-sucking crybaby, little good can come of it kind of like half-assed kind of deal, you know, and you're not really getting much out of it. I think over a period of time, you might hang on for a year or 2 years. Some guys hang on for 10 years, but eventually they're down the tubes. And hey, let's say you hung on for 25, 30, 40 years and then died, but you were a thumb-sucking crybaby, little good guy. Who wants that anyway? You know, he didn't drink, but he was a miserable son of a bitch, you know what I mean? Who needs that anyway? Well, some people want that deal. You know what the sad thing is? I can't even say some people want that deal. That's kind of judgmental in one shape, because here's the sad thing. Some people can't get out of that deal. So you think the addiction is drinking, but drinking is really only a symptom of the disease. You see, I work with most of the alcoholics I work with and the codependents I work with, because I work with codependents, they're not drinking. They're just thinking. And you know what I've seen? I think it's as hard to drink as that. You see, you can lock a guy in a room for a month. You can put a guy in a treatment center for 28 days, and you can break him of the drinking thing. But the thinking thing is a whole other deal. And you can stop a guy from drinking for a month, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, but unless he breaks himself of the thinking deal, he's eventually going back to the drinking deal. And the thinking deal is a tougher addiction than the drinking deal. The thinking deal is a tougher addiction than the drinking deal. Man, you try to work with people who got that thinking addiction. You know, you try to work with the yes butters and the if onlyers, and you don't understanders. You know, and you'll find out what the deal is. when you start shaking your head and saying, why can't he stay sober? And, to stay sober for a month, 6 months, a year, 2 years, because it's the thinking. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. Unless he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. Of real happiness, he will find none at all. Proved beyond doubt by an immense experience, this is one of A's, the facts of AA life. Unless he first accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences. I mean, what does it mean to accept your devastating weakness? Does it really mean to accept the fact that you just can't drink alcohol? Is really that it? There's apparently a lot of other things I have to accept. And there's a lot of things. I mean, have you looked at those? You know, going here, put it for a second, just make believe I might be right. Or the people, what I think, the people in Big Book might be right. And this whole thing depends upon a relationship with God. And that's what the whole thing depends upon. You're developing a relationship with a living creator. Let's say it's true. You know, weirder things have happened. And now look at the steps and look at what they mean to you. Look at the 12 steps and what are they talking about? It's all about cultivating a relationship with God. Getting down to the 11th step, cultivating a relationship. You know, if you buy into this stuff, what it's really asking you to buy into is the not drinking is the least of the deals. And I know we got old curmudgeons back there and say, hey, that's the only thing. Don't drink. And I understand that. And not drinking is important. Don't anybody say that Russell said not drinking is not important, okay? I'm not saying that. But the truth is, if you look at this thing past the step number one, which really has to do with a lot of other things when you get the sixth step, if you look at this thing, what you're buying into, if you do the Greensboro decision in this thing, if you buy into this deal, what we're talking about, you're buying into a lot more than just staying away from alcohol one day at a time. You got to be not reading this stuff or not understanding it unless you understand that you're joining a different type of organization. I mean, you might as well, and I'll tell you what I talk about. I talk of AA as a royal priesthood. I think as far as I'm concerned, you're an A, you're going to do this thing. You might as well, you know, man, you might as well put on the collar. And I know we are not saints, and I'm not saying we're saints, but this is the thing we're involved in here, the thing that AAers are involved in, the thing that is very this. Listen, to me, there's no sunlight, no daylight between what older members in Alcoholics Anonymous are involved with and any monk or any priest or any rabbi or any man of the cloth. You know, it's a search for God and the relationship with God and the focus is on God. No difference whatsoever. Right down to the evangelism. Right down into the mentoring other people. There's like not a shadow of difference. You know what I mean? So we don't pass out the Bible. We pass out the Big Book. You know, it's the same deal. You know, and that's not saying we're religion, but you look at what they're talking about here. Now, after going through there, let's look at page 63. When we remarkably took such a position, now ostensibly this talks about step three. But it really talks about more than that. When we remarkably took such a position, that is, we're going to turn our will over to God. You know, turn our will over, you know, it says we're going to sacrifice ourselves. We're going to forfeit our lives to God. You know, what we want is no longer important. It's what God wants. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So apparently one of the conditions is we keep close to him and perform his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. That takes me to step six. I just want to, encourage everybody to read step six in the 12 and 12. Read what this thing is about. And I hope I'm not misquoting or misunderstanding or whatever it is. I'm just going to tell you what it says to me. And I want to read you something that's kind of interesting that was written 2,000 years ago by the Apostle Paul after I read some of this stuff. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually. and therefore is entitled to be called a man, listen to me, a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. Did you all hear that? A man who is sincerely, if you're involved in this, if you buy into this, one of the things you're buying into, you're not only buying and staying away from the titty bars. You're not only buying, man, you're not only buying, trying not drinking one day at a time or sponsoring. This is what you're buying into if you're going to be one of the men. If you're going to be one of the men, you don't have to buy into this. You can be one of the boys because there's a separation. You got the boys over here. You got the men over there. You can say, you can walk up here and say, I'm a member of AA. I got the white chip, and that's true. Nobody can pick you out. Where are you going to go? He says, I'm going to hang out with the boys. I'll be in the parking lot. You know, you can do that. Nobody can tell you can't do that. But I'm just reading from the book. I'm just reading from the book. I mean, does this stuff mean anything? They just write this down and then you say, well, screw it. You know what I mean? I'm just reading from a book. I'm just telling you, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is actually, I should read this in Chinese. It'll mean something different. There's the men and the boys, right? The boys are over here. The men are sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. So this is how you do it. This is how you do it. I go up to you and I say, would you like to sincerely grow in the image and likeness of your Creator? And say, listen, you do your program and I'll do my program. I said, well, we got the same program. That's the program. You know, I said, listen, get out of my face. I said, okay, you're over in the boys' column, right? Isn't that the deal? Okay, well, I don't know. I'm just reading from the book. That's what the book says. I mean, you know, if you're going to get honest with yourself, why don't you read what it says in the book? Don't sit there and say, well, that's Russell's opinion. It isn't my opinion. It's what it says. This is the program of recovery. You don't have to like it. You can piss me off for reading it. I'm not making this stuff up. This isn't a Russellism. It really isn't. It says, has indeed come a long way and is therefore entitled to be called a man who's sincerely trying to grow in the image of life. Does that mean I'm perfect? I'll match my screw ups with yours. And I am so non-saint-like, so screwed up, so nuts. But you know what? I'm trying. I'm doing the best I can, as crummy as it is. I'm doing the best I can. And you know, when you're doing the best you can, you know, you try to hang out with people who are on that direction. You try to hang out with them. You try to read books about people. And you know what I find out? When you're doing the best you can, you're doing this thing, there's all sorts of people around there that are doing the same deal, in and outside of AA. They're all focused on him and wanting to be like him and wanting to stay close to him and do his will. And that's what they're just looking for, him. Be close to him. See that the relationship with him is right. So step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is A's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. This does not mean we expect that all our character defects be lifted out of us as the drive to drink was. A few of them may be, but with most of them we shall be content with patient improvement. The key words entirely ready underline the fact that we want to aim at the very, now listen to this, we want to aim at the very best. We want to aim at the crown. We want to aim at the king. We want to aim at him in the English language. We want to aim at perfection. We're aiming for heaven. We're aiming, which is not what we were aiming at before we came in here, I don't think. I know what I was aiming at. It wasn't that. Now, it says some people, of course, may conclude that they are indeed ready to have such defects taken from them. But even these people, if they construct a list of still milder defects, will be obliged to admit that they prefer to hang on to some of them. Therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual moral perfection. We want to settle for only so much perfection as we get by in life. And, you know, listen, everybody's got this deal going. I've had this deal going for years. We all do it. I mean, nobody's perfect. We're all sort of like, I'm going to be perfect, but not that perfect. You know what I mean? We all have things that we're sort of sliding on, fudging on, doing all. Okay, that's okay. You know, I do the best I can, and sometimes the best I can is pretty crummy. You know what I mean? But you know what the truth is? I believe in him. I have a relationship with him. And even when I fall down in the job and I'm going to do the best I can, you know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about him and how I'm not living up to what he wants me to be. You see, I may be screwing up, but I'm conscious I'm screwing up. And I know he's there. And I'm never losing. You see, I never get in that deal where I shouldn't say I never get in that deal. What I'm trying to say, if I'm aiming to be like him and that's the chief thing in my mind, I'm looking at the number one thing. Even when I screw up, I have a shot of getting back to that deal, because I'm always focused on that deal, because I ain't focused on the worldly clamors that took Bill Wilson away when the first, you know, he said worldly clamors took me away. I'm not focused on, you know, the money's important to me. Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something right now. Money's important to me. You understand? Is anybody in here that money's important to them? Okay. Okay, so we got the guys that money's important to, and then we got the liars. Okay. So, you know, it's not that important. Money's not that important. It's just right up there with oxygen, right? Okay. So, you know, just try to, okay. So, listen, money's important to me. Now, listen, it's important to me, but listen to me. But it's not that important. You understand? It's just not that important. It's important. It's real important, but it's not that important. You understand what I'm saying? You know, sex is important to me. But you want to know something? It's not that important. Now, here's the deal. It used to be the most important. When sex is the most important thing to you, you know, then you're following another deal. Then there's another deal going on, and there's a whole different deal. There's a whole different belief system, and that leads you to where that leads you. And you have a lot of problems with relationships and stuff and all sorts of screwed up things, and you never get this deal. When money is the most important thing to you, that leads you into a whole other different direction. You're never going to get this deal because that the other deal is clouded out. So it's not that it's not important to us. It's just what's the most. It's just who's on the throne, what you're going to place on the throne of your heart, right? Many will at once ask, "How can we accept the entire implication of step six? So why? That is perfection. This sounds like a hard question, but practically speaking, it isn't. Only step one, where we make 100% admission, we're powerless over alcohol. We can practice with absolute perfection. The remaining 11 steps stay perfect ideals, the goals to which we look. The goals to which we look and the measuring sticks by which we estimate our progress." I want to read you something that was written 2,000 years ago by the Apostle Paul, who was a real whack job. I don't know how many people know about the Apostle Paul. People ask me why I go to Bible study, because it's like going to a step meeting, you know? Because I read about this stuff in the raw, like the founders read about this stuff by guys who were really sick. You know, the Apostle Paul, he had a different type of addiction. He liked killing people. So, yeah, he was the head Christian killer. They sent him out, he killed all the Christians. And it's a whole long story. It was in all the papers. You got to read it. Okay, this is from Philippians. Now, you heard what I just read, what I read from that book. You know who Bill Wilson's mentors were? Sam Shoemaker, Episcopal priest, and Ed Dowling, the Jesuit priest. Okay, now I want to read you. Next time you start thinking, well, this is AA, this ain't the Bible. Now I want to read you what the Apostle Paul said. And think about step six, everything I read in step six. I don't mean to say, and this is Paul talking in the Philippians. He says, I don't mean to say that I have already achieved the, and I'm going to sort of AA this up, so I'm going to leave a couple of things out, you know. So all you churches here, don't get too mad at me, you know, but because we're dealing with people that don't want to hear this shit anyway, okay? So come on. I don't mean to say that I have already achieved these things or that I have already reached perfection. But I keep working towards that day when I will finally be all that God saved me for and wants me to be. No, dear brothers and sisters, I am not all I should be, but I am focusing all my energies on this one thing. One thing. Forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead, I strain to reach the end of the race and achieve the goal and the prize for which God is calling me up to heaven. That's the sixth step. That's the sixth step. He's saying, I'm not reaching perfection. I'm screwed up. And if you know anything about Paul, he was. You know, the thorn in my flesh thing. I'm screwed up. He says, but this is the one thing. I forget all the screw-ups I did yesterday and all things. And I strain to reach that one thing, to be the best possible human being I could be, that God wants me to be. Which is a little bit different. I mean, you know, it sounds as, well, I just do good orderly direction. Because in good orderly direction, like, God ain't there. It's like I'm, by my own strength, you know, you know what that is? That's I'm following the rules. I'm a great rule follower, you know? Don't AAers love rule followers? You ever meet these guys on the street? He says, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. That's the rule, you know what I mean? You want to slap them, you know? This isn't about following rules. It's about wanting to grow and be, it's about being in a relationship with a God of your understanding and wanting to be the best you can be to grow in him, his image and likeness. Now, you may say, well, that sounds a little Bible-y. That's right out of AA. That's AA. That's the big book. That's the 12 and 12. So to me, that's the sixth step. And I want to tell you something. If you're 3 months sober or 2 days sober or 5 years sober and you're saying this stuff's way over, that's the deal. Listen, they call 6 and 7 old-timer steps. That doesn't mean you can't try them or anything like that, and you'll probably not hear 90% of what I'm saying, okay? But I understand that. When I was like 2 days, 5 months, 8 months, you know, I would listen. I said, what is this guy talking about? That doesn't mean you're bad or you're not doing this right or any of that stuff, okay? Okay, but I'm just sort of talking about how I see this thing today in my life. So thank you very much.